Life is full of exciting moments and life challenges alike. The arrival of a new baby, a move to a new home, the loss of a loved one.
During these times, it can be hard to get the basics done, like laundry or making dinner. And our Food Friday guest says one of the best ways to connect to people is to help feed them during these key moments in their lives.
Janet Rich Elsbach writes the blog A Raisin and a Porpoise. Her new book is called Extra Helping, Recipes for Caring, Connecting, and Building Community One Dish at a Time. Janet, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, what led you into this idea of combining a traditional cookbook recipes with this idea of, hey, this is a way to reach out to friends, neighbors, family, and more?
Well, it was kind of two factors. One, it was such a resource and such a help to me and my family during times that have been pretty difficult in recent years. So I was just well aware of the power of it. And one of the things you have to do when you have a book idea is find comparable titles that exist in the world. And I really couldn't find very much that just approached food from this idea of building community and being helpful to other people. And, you know, there's plenty of the special diet for people with this, that, or the other thing, or, you know, any number of resources for that. Those sort of niche purposes, but this is, I wanted to come at it more from the idea of how do you just develop a way of showing up helpfully, regardless, really, of the circumstance or anyone's special particular needs.
You know, Janet, you have said that that delivery of food during particularly stressful, emotional times can feel really good. Why is food a great way to show up for people?
Again, a couple of reasons. One, I think it's one of the very few universals. If you get through a difficult time, or if you get through a difficult Tuesday, you know, from beginning to end, you probably ate something. People need to eat pretty frequently, and so it's just it's a fairly universal need. And it's also it's a pretty simple act of care. It's something we all tend to do in one way or another for ourselves, whether we cook or not. If you don't cook, you certainly know how to access food in some other way, again, because it's a sort of universal need. And people's thresholds for attention, conversation, other kinds of assistance are sort of all over the map, but people's need for food is pretty universal. So it's something that you can show up and offer if someone's not in the mood to interact, just by leaving it on their doormat. So it's just a very plug-and-play, sort of universal way to access supporting somebody, because you know they need it, you know they need food.
And one thing I love, Janet, is that you talk about when you're cooking for somebody else, remember that you're cooking for them and what they want and what they need, not what you necessarily think they should have. Can you talk about that?
Sure. When I reflect on it, I think, you know, people ask me sort of what's the one thing that everybody needs to know, and I kind of came at this from a place of the recipes, which I believe in and I spend a lot of time developing, are secondary to just that willingness and curiosity. I think those are the two things that you kind of need to have. The curiosity about what is somebody hungry for, what do they really detest, what are they missing most if they're going through an illness? Sometimes certain things are off limits. And how could you offer them something that's satisfying, that satisfies that same hunger that maybe conforms to what they're able to eat? And I feel like curiosity is a real, it's the one essential item in the toolkit. It's, like you said, that you don't come in saying, this is what makes me feel better, and so obviously it's going to make you feel better. If you come in and ask, you can learn so much about that person. You can deepen the connection in really meaningful ways. And you also, with all of these things, you develop your skill set and your toolkit so that when you go into the next situation, you have a lot more information to offer the next person.
So, Janet, let's say you wanted to take food to someone. You know, how do you account for things like food allergies and dislikes?
That's a great question. I think those are more and more a factor both in people's diets and also in what holds people back from showing up in a helpful way now, because you think, oh, I don't know, I think that one of their kids has a nut allergy, or maybe that one of them is a vegan, I can't remember, and then people just get overwhelmed, as they often do when called upon to help in any situation. People say, I didn't want to intrude, or I wasn't sure what to do, and then people just don't offer anything at all. And I would say, first of all, showing up in this way with a meal, even if worst case scenario, it isn't something they can eat, you've still done something pretty nice. You've demonstrated that you were thinking about them for as long as it took you to prepare or procure whatever you've offered them, which is great. And the other thing is that these days it's a lot easier in situations where people are going through something pretty rigorous in terms of trouble, like an illness or a loss, or even something great like having a baby. There's all these technological things now, apps and websites that help you keep track of what they can and can't eat. And the other thing that's great about most of those sites is you can see what other people are bringing them, so you don't bring them the seventh lasagna of the week. You can look and go, oh, I think they might be a little tired of pasta. You know, I'll try something else. And I think those tools, one of the great things about those tools is it's sort of hard to say to someone who says, I'm going to make you dinner. What can you guys not eat? People tend to be a little hesitant, saying, well, you know, the youngest doesn't like mushrooms, and, you know, running down the list of things. But they're much more comfortable just entering preferences into a device. So those, I'm a big believer in those kinds of technology assists.
Janet Rich Elsbach is with us. Her new book is called Extra Helping: Recipes for Caring, Connecting, and Building Community One Dish at a Time. Janet, in your recipes, you tackle some challenges that don't always come up in your basic cookbooks. One of them is transportability. As you learned one time when you had a good layer of soup, I think, on the floor of your car, what kind of things can we think about to make sure our food is easily transportable, to drop off at the person's house or to bring to the big community event?
Well, that is definitely, that deepens the learning curve when you have to scrape minestrone out of your floor mats. I am a huge believer in mason jars, just because they're sturdy, they're very inexpensive to acquire. People are often just getting rid of them on Craigslist or, you know, some other at a tag sale. Or just cleaning out their basement, and they have secure lids, which is just the holy grail of food transport, something that you can really tighten the lid down on. And they come in a bazillion sizes. They're heat-proof. That's just a great resource. One of the things I remember when we were given food, particularly after having babies, was the task of remembering whose dishes were whose and sort of keeping track of that was just another thing to think about. And the nice thing about inexpensive things like mason jars is they're A, reusable, recyclable, you know, have sort of an endless lifespan, and they're, again, pretty inexpensive to acquire, so you don't need to track too preciously, like, who did this come from? But so a big believer in mason jars and a big believer in a lot of things that you can pick up at tag sales and yard sales and places like that, you know, that have, basically anything with a good lid that clamps right down.
One of the things that I've noticed that you've done in the book is that you've split it up based on the type of life event a person's experiencing. So why'd you do that?
Well, that kind of gets back to what we were talking about curiosity and how the mindset that you approach things with is really more important than what you're cooking. I try to think about what each kind of situation demands of a person going through it, and then I put in recipes that suggested themselves to me as things that would be comforting or supportive or entertaining or rewarding for any of those situations. And I did that in conversation with a lot of people. I asked a lot of people, like, what are things that you remember someone showing up with for you, or that were really comforting to you as a kid? And it was very revealing to hear from all these people about what those things were, and it touches on one of the nice parts for me about being curious and asking those questions, and also looking kind of beyond my cultural background or ethnic background to what other people were fed and find appealing. Again, food is just really universal. Being fed by whoever took care of you when you were little, being comforted by it, is such a powerful thing. You never forget that. And it deepens your, because you've had that experience, whether for you it was chicken noodle soup and for this other person it was, you know, roasted who knows what. The feeling is a place where empathy can grow from, or compassion and just mutual understanding can grow from that, because everybody's had that feeling of being handed just the right thing at a particular time, whatever form it took. So I just tried to think about those situations in general, and walk readers through my thinking process, so that not so they could necessarily make the 7 or 8 or 9 recipes in that chapter for their people, but so they could go, oh, you know, actually this person, I think this would be more suitable, or maybe I'll see if they like this thing that my grandmother used to make for me. Or it's more the thought process and, again, the curiosity that you approach it with.
We're talking with author Janet Rich Elsbach about how we can show we care and build community through cooking during this edition of Food Friday.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your go-to dish when you are taking something to a neighbor or a loved one when they can use a helping hand? How has your community maybe supported you with food and offers of help during good or bad times in your life when you needed a little help? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll pick up this conversation in just a bit right here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Darrell Connor. Right now, we're continuing our conversation with Janet Rich Elsbach, author of Extra Helping, Recipes for Caring, Connecting, and Building Community One Dish at a Time.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever done this? Somebody has a new kid, has a death in the family, a big life event. You bring some food over for them. Do you have a go-to dish that you like to bring people in that situation? Or have you ever had that moment where you were on the receiving end of people bringing you food? How much did it help? What were some of your favorite things about that? Or do you have a question for our guest about something maybe you could bring to somebody this weekend? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Also, head over to WPR.org/Food Friday. We have a few recipes from Janet there. And Janet, let's get into one of those now. You shared little recipes for twice-baked potatoes. Now, why is this a good one to bring over for other people to reheat at will?
Well, that's a great one, both in terms of how wonderful it is to offer other people, and also one of the common questions I get is, I'm so busy, there's no way I can fit. I can barely feed myself or my family. I can't fit cooking for other people into this picture. And to me, those potatoes are basically the self-care option, because it's a recipe that you can do in bits and pieces. You have the oven on for some other reason, you can bake the potatoes, and then you can put them away until you have time to deal with the rest of it. And you can do it stepwise in that way. And then what you end up with is something that's so versatile. Someone can, you know, grab it off the counter and on their way to the changing table with the baby, or on their way to orchestra practice or whatever, and they reheat really well, they travel really well. So it's just a great, and it's such a basic thing. I mean, it's cutting an X in a potato, baking till it's cooked, and then mixing some stuff inside. And it gets back to what we were talking about before about adapting things to your people. It works with anything. It works for vegans, and it works for carnivores, and it works for all kinds of people, because it's just such an adaptable idea. You're basically baking a potato and then singing it up, as a friend of mine used to say.
You know, you've also shared a recipe for aguadito. What exactly is aguadito?
Aguadito is a Peruvian chicken soup. And it's, you know, chicken soup is a pretty standard measure of...
Yes, that's pretty universal.
Yeah, taking care of people. But the interesting thing about it is, when you travel around the globe, it takes a little bit different form in various places, and the form that it takes there is this kind of richly seasoned, not rich in the heavy sense, but just a very flavorful, very seasoned soup, which again is really adaptable to individual tastes. It has a little bit of kick, a little bit of spice, which you can dial up or dial down depending on who you're feeding. And it's just a little bit outside the ordinary chicken soup, which there's absolutely nothing wrong with. It's kind of the gold standard of taking care of people, but it's just a way to add a little something else to your repertoire if chicken soup is your kind of comfort food.
And Janet, you gave another piece of practical advice that I love. Sometimes when people have brought food over, you look at it and think, how long do I heat it up? What temperature? Stovetop? Oven? What? You suggest having those materials handy for labeling.
Labeling goes, to me, along with the mason jar, I don't ever run out of masking tape and a Sharpie, because you can just label containers with your name, and you can label them with really basic instructions, because especially when people are overwhelmed by a difficult circumstance, they're not, whatever you tell them verbally, they're very unlikely to remember an hour or 2 hours later the next day when they go to make use of the food. So it's great to just write on the container, and something that you can remove put this in the oven at 350, take the cover off, the dressing's in the jar, this is the dressing for the salad, that kind of thing is really helpful. And I also love, while we're talking about particular instructions, I love putting a note in. And all of these things are just really basic. They're not, you don't need to have gone to chef school or been doing this for years or anything. Just, you know, even clipping a little comic out of the paper or writing a quick note, thinking of you, or sharing some little thing on the note. I keep a lot of those notes, I think I said in the book, and not because they tell me how to reheat the potatoes, but the sentiments that people shared when they delivered food were so meaningful and really moving. So you have a lot of opportunity on that index card or, you know, the back of the grocery list to write just a little something.
Let's go to a call. Let's go to Kim in Eau Claire. Good afternoon, Kim. Welcome to Central Time.
Hello, thank you. Yes, my wife and I retired, and just yesterday I made chili, and the neighbors have two children, and they have a busy schedule after school. So even then I brought the chili over, but throughout the summer we'll do that when they've got so many things going, like people do nowadays with the kids, ball, dance, blah, blah. So we make them dinners. They call when they're coming home. We have it hot and bring it over so they have food.
Kim, that's so great. Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Kim. What about chili? I imagine like chicken soup, chili can be universal too, depending on how you make it.
Exactly, depending on how you make it. And you need, you know, knowing a little bit about who you're serving it to. But the thing that struck me most about that call was the enjoyment in his voice about showing up for the people in that way. It really is a two-way street. It's people sometimes feel uncomfortable taking help because they think they're a burden or they think they're, you know, it sort of makes the scale uneven in some way. But when someone's going through something, and again, it can be as minor as a Tuesday when the kids have team practice or, you know, a pretty significant life event, when you want to be of use and of, you know, of some help, it's very gratifying. It's definitely an exchange, and it makes it, to me, it's a spiral that moves through a community, because if you've offered that help and the person's accepted it, then maybe down the line when you are strapped in some way, you'll be more ready to accept it, and they'll be more ready to offer it. And it really strengthens a community. One of the criticisms I read of the book, somebody said, well, this is a fantasy book. Who lives in a place where there's people who show up with food for you? And I thought, that's so great. What you're saying is you're the person who needs to start it where you are. Show up for your neighbor. You know, offer them, do just as that caller did. Make extra. You have extra soup, and just bring them some. And then it's not a fantasy anymore. You've started creating exactly that network of support that is great to participate in, both as a giver and a receiver.
Kim, thanks for sharing that story. We're talking to Janet Rich-Elsbach. Her new book is called Extra Helping, Recipes for Caring, Connecting, and Building Community One Dish at a Time. Want to get into another section of your book, Janet. A lot of this has been, you know, the family next door or the friends across town or whatever. You also talk and have a chapter about cooking for that big group, whether it's a preschool class you did or the team or the volunteers at the library or whatever. Talk about your strategies for cooking for that larger community.
That's where willingness really plays a big part, because the first time, I think the story I told in the book was this one of the moms at school who has four kids and runs her own business and is incredibly fit and just one of the, you know, a very daunting presence to say no to because she fits so much into her own life, asked if I would, as she asked every mother or father at the school, would you make soup for the faculty on Thursdays? And I wanted to say, I've never made that much of anything. You know, it was for 40 or 50 people. But you couldn't say no to this person. So I thought, well, I guess I'll figure it out. And that was, of course, when the soup ended up in my floor mat. So I learned a very powerful lesson about jars with lids. But just willingness and willingness to experiment a little bit, willingness to rely, maybe if you're a scratch cook, willingness to rely on canned beans in that situation because it allows you to fit the cooking into whatever time you have available. I'm a big believer in fitting it in however it fits in your life. You don't need to do it the way that somebody else does it. It's great if you can do it. If showing up for dinner for someone involves swinging by the store and picking something up for them, you've started. That's great. And maybe the next time you would cook something yourself. But if that's the only way you can do it, offering the help is great. And cooking for huge numbers of people, it draws on a lot of the same skills as cooking for a small number of people. There's a little more math involved, but it's just something you need to start, and you learn some lessons along the way by washing out the floor mats, and then you go forward and you try it again.
With about a minute left, if you're not a cooker or a baker, but you still want to support someone, what resources are available to help you help people through food?
Well, again, in this day and age, it is, you know, the work of a minute Googling to find a meal delivery service, especially if someone, even if you are a cook, but the person you want to help is, you know, miles and miles away, you can often order something and have it delivered to them. There's, you know, anything from full meal kits to you can have a restaurant, you know, bring them dinner. But I really encourage people to find, someone said to me, I can't show up for people like this. The only thing I know how to do is make apple pie or whatever it was in her case. And I thought, well, that's great. You don't need a whole repertoire of things. You're the person who shows up with a pie. You know, you can start with something really basic, like baking a potato and scraping it out and baking it again. And then all of a sudden you've done something really that's gratifying to you and to the person who's going to receive it. So just find one little place to start. And you only need to be capable of doing one thing. And then you can say, this is my thing.
Really inspiring, Janet. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Janet Rich-Alsbach blogs at A Raisin and a Porpoise and is the author of the book we've been talking about, Extra Helping, Recipes for Caring, Connecting, and Building Community, One Dish at a Time.
You can find those recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday, and you can share stories on the Ideas Network Facebook page.